Welcome back to the Mackham in the Middle podcast after another Sunderland league game, this time away from home against Millwall. A 1-1 draw in which Millwall, of course, took the lead. Sunderland with a late equaliser thanks to Dennis Sirkin on his return, coming on as a substitute in the last 20 or 15 minutes, I think it was. And as always, we'll get into what happened during the game. We'll touch a little bit on obviously what happened during the transfer window and kind of the one notable omission from the incomings. But first and foremost, before we get into what actually happened during the game, John, it is a draw, it's a point, and ultimately it is one of the hardest places to go in the Championship. So all in being told, it is a good point.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. you know, we know the squad is very, very young. A lot of teams go there, and I'm sure that, you know, we know what their place is like, but I'm sure it's a bit of a fortress. I'm sure they've got a very, very good record there. So, yeah, for all of our young players, and to the fact, personally, I don't think we played very well at all, but I don't think they let us play. You've got to take, you know, you've got to take a point there. And those are the points that you accept if you then go on to, you know, the next game and you pick up three. Those are the games you say, yeah, that's a really, really good point. But yeah, it's hard to judge because they're not, like, I've seen Gary Rowett's comments and, you know, I don't even know if he knows what football is because they don't play any football at all.
I think the best thing I said about it was they are literally the Championship, Wigan. That's exactly how they play.
Yeah, they are. Yes, like you say, it's intimidating. They bypass the midfield. If you're a half-decent midfielder and they come in for you, you've got to be thinking, that's not for me. I know we've had some games, you know, in the Premier League against Man City, and we've sat and dug in and tried to counter, but I don't even know what sort of their tactics are. It's very much bully boy, we'll smash you. You know, it's a little bit like having 11 Danny Baffs in the team and just, yeah, we'll see if we can just, you know, batter you. So for all of the young kids to come on, you know, to stand that test, especially, you know, we didn't really have an outlet up front, you know, and a few of the players probably wouldn't have fancied it. I know Michu made a comment saying, oh, you never get that in, you know, in France. So I think all in all, you know, on the whole, I think we've got to be quite happy with the point. The only thing I'll be unhappy with is, if we just don't concede that stupid goal, which is quite a stupid one, you know, it's quite lucky because it's on the floor, then it's a 1-0 win and you're thinking, wow, what a massive result. But yeah, we'll take the point and we'll move on.
Yeah. And obviously, Kyle, that's 4 points from the two games against Millwall. And like John said there, the performance from Sunderland, probably excluding the first 20 minutes and last 20 minutes, was genuinely quite poor. And I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that. But at the same time, Millwall didn't pose much of a threat. Sunderland didn't pose much of a threat from a neutral point of view. It was a pretty torrid watch of football.
Yeah, and I think it was the Echo who interviewed, I think it was Alex Jones of Millwall's. He's kind of one of their beat writers and things like that. And I think he said it best, is essentially like, if you're expecting to come to Millwall and play this beautiful brand of football, like, you're going to find out real quick that's not what's going to happen. And yeah, we definitely saw that. And I think it took roughly about probably 60, 65 minutes into the game where we realized, like, okay, we're going to have to be a little bit more industrious here and really just kind of beat them at their own game. And I think that's what we did. But yeah, it was not an enjoyable watch for a long period of time. And really what it was is, you know, I think especially with how we pass, we're typically, you know, waiting to receive the pass and looking at our next move. But they were, as soon as a ball would be passed, they were on whoever was going to be receiving that ball immediately. And there were so many times they just nicked it right off us and went down the other way for somewhat of a counter. But like you said, they weren't really, you know, they were kind of toothless in their attack as well. Yeah, just, I think it was exactly what I expected. It was, you know, League One-esque. I've said that a few times as well, but still miles ahead of where League One was. But yeah, nonetheless, I mean, if taking 4 points from Millwall, I think that's really about what almost any team could ask, all that they could ask for, because most teams are lucky to beat them at their own home. Going to the Den, you're really lucky to get out of there with any points. So I think 4 points is a solid return for a promotion contending team, or a playoff contending team.
Yeah. And obviously the fouling was one of the key factors in the game. I think it was 39 in throughout the 90 minutes, John, and obviously a lot of that came right at the start of the game. But the first kind of 15, 20 minutes, Sunderland played the football that people know they're capable of, and although didn't do too much with it in the final third, were the better team in that period?
Yeah, we, you know, obviously we're going to like to start games and dictate the play. You know, I think it can be, it's going to be very hard to continue that for the night. But yeah, we started quite brightly. I thought Geldhart, to be fair, linked up quite well and looked, you know, even though he's quite small, he sort of fit in really well, I think, especially in the early stages of the first half. Obviously, you know that, you know, a barrage is coming, you know, of long balls, free kicks, throw-ins and all those types of things. So it's probably a little bit frustrating. We maybe didn't build on it. I was quite disappointed about our decision-making in the games. You know, just a few times could have got our head up and played in a ball. I think Patrick Roberts was guilty a few times, Ahmad a few times. But ultimately, you know, it's like we said, it's a point on the board, and I think Millwall's the anomaly of the league where you just have to go, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And obviously, like you say, it was a first half with not too many chances, not too many, I suppose, passes in the final third for either team, Kyle. And, you know, obviously it was 0-0 half-time. Second half, Millwall carried on the way they continued in the first half. Sunderland didn't start the second half as well as they did the first, and I think it was about 15 minutes into the second half, although actually I've just missed a bit, haven't I? Which is obviously the goal, which is one of the main talking points, so I don't know how I missed that one, but the offside goal that was given. The ball comes in, I think it was, I want to say it was Saville. No, it wasn't. Saville was the one offside.
I think,
I don't know who it was that actually had the shot.
I think it's Honeyman who actually, oh no, Honeyman had the follow-up, but yeah, you're right. But all I know is that Saville was deemed offsides, and I was watching it obviously on my computer, and boy did I not see that. The replays did show it, but yeah, that was one that I felt like we got away with a little bit there.
Yeah, and obviously it's a close one because I don't think you really saw too many angles of it, John, but you're looking at it and at the time you think Patterson, yeah, he's got to save, like he's got to catch it, or Palmer away somewhere out of danger. He didn't. Palmer straight to Honeyman gets in there, and the famous Sunderland story was very nearly continued again with an ex-Sunderland player scoring against us. Even worse, it's an ex-Sunderland Academy player. But it's a remarkably good decision when you look back at it. And again, you can't be 100% sure from the angle that you get on the stream that he was offside. I think he might have been by a yard or maybe half a yard, but he is right in the eye line of Patterson. And by the laws of the game, although he hasn't touched the ball, he hasn't actually played a part in the build-up or anything like that, if you're blocking the side of the keeper in an offside position, you are, by the laws of the game, interfering with play.
Yeah, you know, we'll take it. I know I was watching the stream and I was fuming at the time, and then they sort of flashed into the linesman with the flag up, which I was quite happy about. If you're in the eye line, you're deemed to be interfering with play, and obviously that, because let's be honest, Patterson is a very, very good goalie, and you'd expect him to deal with it. So it's, I don't know if it's taking a deflection or him just being in the way has shifted it, because you'd expect him to deal with that. My frustration would be, how is George Honeyman free, you know, to go in and tap it in? We should be reacting. You know, we know Patterson's very, very good at handling, but everyone's got to play to the whistle. Everyone's got to play until that ball's in his hands, so we don't stop moving. But Honeyman obviously gets in and scores, and there was obviously a big frustration with that. But then, you know, linesman's a Mac and bowl accounts, and he's done us a massive favour, to be fair. And as well, made Gary Rowett fume a little bit. But yeah, tough shit.
It is. On to that goal, though, Kyle, which I was going to mention before somehow forgot the opening one. John alluded to earlier, it's a ball in the box. It's a set piece, I think it was. I think it's Jake Cooper who eventually gets the goal, who, for someone who is about 6'3", I think he is, he was on the floor more often than not. And again, he was on the floor for this one, and he just swings a boot at it while he's on the floor. It loops over just about everyone, hits the post, goes in. It's a very scrappy goal to concede, but I think the whole kind of, I suppose, scenario of the game, Sunderland just didn't really deal with the set pieces very well.
Right. And I think Danny Collins mentioned it on the stream as well, as just saying he didn't like how we were setting up with the previous corners and the previous free kicks and things like that. So he said he just wasn't surprised. But yeah, I think that if there's ever a goal to sum up kind of how Millwall plays, it's a giant defender on his ass scoring just like a weird goal like that to get him up 1-0 at home. So yeah, it wasn't ideal. I still think set pieces and corners are something that we just haven't quite figured it out, but it might be somewhat of a personnel issue as far as just if someone has height on us, we're just a relatively small team. But I think that's been reinforced with the players, you know, that we brought in, such as, you know, Ekwa, who's, you know, over 6 foot. Even that Anderson, who got on, I'm sure we'll get on to later. He's pretty tall and lanky as well. So height's obviously something that's been addressed in this window, which, you know, I think somewhat goes overlooked. But hopefully that will kind of show itself down the season more. But yeah, it's another free kick that I just, or, you know, corner type situation where I just didn't feel like we defended it well enough. And yeah, he scored on his ass. So, I mean, credit to him. But yeah, it was a very Millwall-esque goal. I think it summed up the game to that point.
Yeah. And I suppose if there's one scenario that you're going to say that Sunderland weren't ever going to score in this game against Millwall, John, it would be from a set piece. But ironically, that's exactly how we did score in this game. There's a ball in the box. It was Alex Pritchard, obviously, on the free kick. I'm not sure who won it initially, but obviously Pritchard making his return after what seems to be probably about maybe 2 or 3 months. I think he's been out. Could be wrong on that one. But he comes off the bench, takes the free kick. It's whipped in towards Dennis Serkin, who, again, just returning from injury. And obviously we'll get on to another injury. He wins the header. It's a good goal in the end. It's something that, you know, people probably underestimate how brave you have to be to actually go for a header in that, because I think he's got 3 centre-halves around him. He's got the goalkeeper rushing out. He gets his head on it, and obviously that is the goal that gets us the point. But it was an important time to get the goal as well, because Millwall, you know, they could have easily sat off and probably seen the game out, very much like a Wickham team would have in League One. But to get that goal then, to get the equaliser, was important.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you could tell obviously after that they were, you know, they sat off us a lot and did actually really worry about us, which, you know, you think if you score maybe, you know, in the first half where you go 1-0 up, maybe the game goes, you know, a little different way. You know, them scoring puts them, you know, they can sit in, you know, and let us play. But yeah, as soon as we scored, it was literally like all us. And yeah, but it is about time we started scoring from these, you know, using these. If, you know, if we've lost Ross Stewart, you know, we're not the biggest side. But, you know, Dennis Serkin only scores really, really amazing, brave headers. You know, I remember his one he scored earlier on the season. Yeah, yeah, where, he, you know, it's desire and to get in there and fair play to him. Yeah, with Pritchard, a bit of quality. You know, we've probably been waiting for that as well. We've definitely missed that. I think he helps on the press as well. That certainly made a difference and links things in a little bit. But yeah, we need to add those things to our game. You know, it's another string to our bow. Yes, the fluid attacking football is fantastic, but sometimes when that doesn't come off, you know, you need that. It's probably poor from a defensive perspective from them, because they've got a lot of lumps who just stick their head, leg anywhere. So yeah, for Serkin, you know, who looks quite, you know, he's not the tallest guy, but we know he's decent in the air. You know, it's a fantastic brave header and probably a little bit deserving, if I'm honest, because obviously we didn't have too many shots on goal, but we had a lot of the play that we didn't really do much. I know the goalkeeper was quite untested most of the game. So yeah, it was nice to get level.
Yeah. And like I say, Kyle, it's been a while since Pritchard's played, and, you know, people were questioning whether, you know, kind of what role he could play when he does come back, with obviously Ahmad playing so well, Robert playing so well, and obviously Clark on the left. But obviously it was Clark that came off for him. And just when you've got someone like Pritchard on the pitch, you see the link up player that you get involved in. He's always in these little pockets of spaces, but the main thing that you get from Pritchard is his ability to deliver the ball into the box and, you know, pick someone out 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, sorry, my kid just came in proclaiming that she needs donuts this morning. So if you heard that in the background, I'm sorry. But yeah, no, the Pritchard injury, I think, is a weird one. And there's, I think the fans are still split on him because, you know, he wasn't in the best of form, you know, prior to his, you know, injury and things like that. But I think his time away from the team, what it's allowed us to do is get players like Patrick Roberts and you know, in form and on the field again and kind of change up the position. So in a way, it might be one of those situations where it's going to benefit us in the end, because we have more people in the fold, more players in the fold who are ready, who are now kind of in form like we've seen, and having him be able to come in there and deliver a free kick like that, you know, to put us up, you know, or to equalize was just fantastic. So I'm a huge Alex Pritchard fan. I know the story came out too that his contract extension did get applied, I believe. He was one of those players. So
I think so, yeah.
Him and Danny Bart. So they're both with us for at least another year, which I think is big. you know, but yeah, a player of his quality to come on. And I mean, especially the amount of stick that he was getting from the minute that he got off the bus. And those videos are just absolutely hilarious with those Millwall fans. But for him to come off and, you know, come on and you know, come on the pitch and make an impact like that after injury, I think just shows his character, shows his resolve. And I think it's only going to benefit us having someone like him at our disposal, especially in situations like the free kicks like we saw yesterday.
Yeah, and obviously one of the other talking points, John, and I say a talking point, it hasn't been mentioned too much, but it has been brought up a little bit, is the obviously the injury to Dennis Erkin. He gets a knockout call, he goes off injured, and I think initially it looked a lot worse than it actually was in the end. Obviously he will not play against Fulham and probably miss the next league game at the minimum as well. But like I say, the ball goes into the box, Dennis Erkin wins the header, the keeper's late to it, he connects with him with, you know, a right hook that Floyd Mayweather would be proud of. And there's so many times you'll see that in football and it just gets ignored. But like people point out, if that's a defender making a late challenge, or, you know, if a defender goes to win the ball and catches someone with his elbow, to red card, Luke O'Neill, that red card against whoever it was, can't remember off the top of my head. But, you know, he goes in to win the ball, he doesn't win it, he's late, it's mistimed, it is dangerous, it's a red card. Is there still a question to be asked about whether that obviously ends up in a goal, so you're not going to really see a red card for it anyway, but in the general kind of consensus of what happens, is there a case for that to be a red card?
Yeah, 100%, I think. You know, especially when we're living in a day and age where it's, you know, it's all about, you know, mental health and, you know, the current state of, you know, head in and you know, all those types of things. If you're going to strip it back to that, then obviously it's, you know, the goalkeeper's come out, he's absolutely gone for the ball, which he goalkeepers have to. They're very well protected. But in fairness, he's done damage to our player, to his head. And with a punch, he knows he can do that without any real repercussions because how well protected the goalkeepers are. You know, so if you do want to stamp that out, like you say, it, for me, that is dangerous play. Like, you couldn't, if someone does that on the, you know, a player does that to another player, then it obviously is deemed, I'm not saying it is the same deemable offence of violent conduct, but it's still a foul. Obviously, you know, some of the tackles that are, you know, given nowadays, yes, they're not proper dirty fouls, but because someone's, you know, a couple of seconds quicker or even 1 second quicker, then, you know, you catch the man and that's the foul. That's that to me is no different to circling head in the ball and getting punched in the head. Is no different to me. But because goalkeepers are well protected, they know they can get away with it. So for me to stamp that out, you know, I don't know if the referee would see it because I just saw the ball hit the post and hit the net.
It's one of them that you will only see with VAR.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the sort of thing you can enforce in the Premier League, but the rest of it, unless you've got a referee who's an absolute hawkeye, you know, I don't think those things are going to be, you know, given. But I think keepers do still have to be mindful of, you know, I think Dennis Erkin was actually out cold when it showed you the pictures back. He was literally just slumped on the floor and you could tell there was no life in him at the moment. And then they sort of, you know, they picked up. So it is, you know, we are in that, you know, head injuries are a big thing. And, you know, I think those types of things have maybe got to be sort of clamped down on, especially for me, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, and obviously you see it all the time, Kyle. And I think while John was talking there, the other kind of incident that comes to mind in regards to like a goalkeeper coming out of his goal and making some kind of connection with an attacker or whoever it was is if you remember the challenge on Van Dijk from Pickford.
Yep.
Where if that wasn't Pickford and that was, you know, Connor Cody or Tarkowski, it's a straight red card. It's a horror challenge. It's talked about in the media. It's slandered by the pundits. And he probably gets more than 3-game ban for it because of the way he went in for it. But because it was Pickford and keepers are allowed to, I suppose, kind of come and challenge for the ball without necessarily going for the ball, it just gets let off and doesn't really get talked about too much. And again, it's exactly the same with this one because he's come out, he hasn't won the ball, he's cleaned Sergen straight out. Like John said there, he's out cold. It's a potentially serious injury. Obviously, you've seen so many head injuries in the past. Again, the one that comes to mind is like, you know, I think it was Ryan Mason, where, you know, he had his career ended by a head injury. I think he was only 24, 25 at the time. It is one of them that anyone else on the pitch makes a challenge like that, it's a straight red card.
Right. And I'm just kind of trying to think, you know, because it's one thing to identify the problem, which, you know, there's something that's obviously amiss here, but it's, you know, what's the solution really? And it's, you know, do you limit the keeper's ability to be able to make a punch on the ball? And it's one of those where, I mean, it's such a valuable tool for a keeper. You know, I think any keeper would say like, nah, like that's ridiculous. You know, how are we supposed to defend these types of corners? Or it's, I mean, more padding in the gloves even, you know, or, you know, are players going to have to start wearing, you know, headgear, which I think I just saw an article on that in this week as well. But I mean, as someone who watches a lot of American football where the head injuries are just disgusting, it's, you know, football is up there as well with the types of injuries, sustained to the head with headers. And these ones are the worst easily just because of where the contact is. And there's no way Dennis Sirkin can brace for getting punched in the head like that. But yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, I don't really know what the solution is, you know, outside of limiting the keeper's
ability. I suppose it's kind of the same consensus at a time where if you go into a challenge as a defender or midfielder or attacker, wherever you play it, and you have your studs up, if you win the ball, nothing's thought of it. If you don't win the ball and you catch the man, you're probably going to get turned off. And I think it should be exactly the same as that. But I think the trouble with that one is, like John said there, that referees aren't going to see that. Yeah. Even when you watch it on the stream, I don't think anyone saw that. You know, people were saying, oh, was it the defender? Was it our player? Did Dennis Sirkin catch someone? Like, no one knew what happened. And the only time anyone will ever really have a good idea as to what happened there is with VAR. Yeah. And if that does become a red card offence where a keeper comes out, he misses the ball and, you know, it endangers an opponent, you've got to look at the likes of League One, League Two, the Championship at the minute, where they're not going to get VAR. So that rule is just not going to get played out.
You know, I'd say one thing too. I think keepers are trained a little bit more now. You know, I feel like you are seeing, you know, the punch utilized less than probably you had in the past. I think keepers are just so much better at reading the flight of the ball and using their hands that, you know, just to catch the ball. But yeah, I think you're right. There has to be some sort of like window of time, or, you know, even I think you see these types of really bad incidents happen on free kicks outside the box that are kind of the in-swinging type versus on corners. I feel like you just don't see it just because of where the ball is and the trajectory of the ball, but it's definitely these in-swinging free kicks from outside the box that's the most dangerous because you have a line of defenders running toward the goal and the goalie's trying to come out. I think that would be maybe a situation where you could say, hey, this type of free kick, you know, keepers maybe can't utilize the punch, you know, if you try to put stipulations on that. But yeah, it's just rough to see. It, you know, you just don't want to see that. And, you know, Dennis Sirkin, he got up and good on him. But, you know, concussions are no joke. And they can add up over the course of a season, over the course of a career. And, it'll be an interesting one to see how the FA or whoever makes these types of rules for this, if they start to really look into that and, you know, what it is. But nonetheless, bravo to Sirkin for putting his head literally on the line to get that goal and get us the equalizer. But yeah, you just want to make sure he's healthy and safe.
Yeah,
it's a frustrating one as well. And on the side note of we potentially lose him for two games. You know, we've just literally got him back, and by the protocols, I think it's 5 days he's not allowed. I don't know. I think it's like any football or something. So he could potentially, obviously, we've got a big game Wednesday. You know, the difference of us going through and making a bit of money and those types of things. We lose him because of that punch, and like I say, it's just like a tackle. So I don't see. I don't see how they can't start clamping down. It seems like obviously it's punishable to us again because we're the ones who are going to have to lose him for potentially, you know, one or two games.
Yeah. And just before we get onto the last couple of things, I did talk about the transfer window. And one of the things, obviously, when we went 1-0 down in the game, especially in this game because of the physicality of John, is the lack of striking options, to put it bluntly. Obviously, we didn't bring one in the January transfer window. We did realistically need minimum of one, arguably two. We didn't get any. Obviously, the Ellison situation was something that kind of went on pretty much since the day he got recalled by Everton. Obviously, Sean Dyche came in, and I don't think they actually ended up signing anyone in the last couple of days to window Everton. So to let him go is obviously something that they didn't really think they could do. Sunderland obviously pursued other targets, and I think Speakman said on the Sunderland podcast that they had multiple, you know, seven-figure bids in for players that just never quite materialised. So it is one of them frustrating ones where you can possibly understand how difficult it is to actually bring a striker in that situation. But at the same time, it's going to be a long, you know, kind of 17 games end of the season, especially if Gelhard gets injured now.
Well, yeah, you're always worried, aren't you? You know, when you're, you know, with Gelhard's playing, and if he does go off injured, I know, you know, it almost sounded like Tony Mowbray was like, well, it's, you know, if he does get injured, we're going to have to sort of just, you know, muck on in. And I think this is obviously just my own personal opinion. I think it's a little bit sort of unambitious from the club. You know, if we're so well run, which bowler counts we are, if we're so good on the targets that we keep bringing in, which again, looking at all the others we've got, we are, I don't see how we're floundering with the striker situation. Obviously, I probably would have been I probably would have been content if they said, we've got Stewart, we've got Gelhardt, we tried to get Sims, it didn't happen. We tried to get another youngster to bolster it, nothing, you know, I probably could have accepted it. But with the Ross Stewart obviously getting injured for the whole season, not like we can have him back in a month, you go, okay. You know, we're putting a lot of pressure. Doesn't matter if he says he loves the pressure, I'm sure he does. He's a professional footballer, but he's a 19-year-old kid, you know, and he has got the pressure on him. And it's a bit of, Mowbray did sound like, it was, well, we'll just muck in and we'll play without a striker. And it's, yes, we want to buy all those 20-year-olds and get them in, and can we, you know, nurture them, and in 2 years' time they'll be worth, I don't know, 15, 20 million, we'll sell one and we'll reinvest. That's fine. But sometimes the long-term plan has short-term plans. And you're telling me that we couldn't pick up one, you know, what were we looking at, Sam Sturridge bowl account? You know, those types of players who can come in and just do a job for 6 months, just be even a big lump. No, it doesn't even have to be a superstar, if you know what I mean. You know, someone who can just be up there, we can hit long balls, even for 20 minutes. You're not going to start because we play free-flowing football, but for 20 minutes you'll come on. We're not expecting you to run the channels. You know, you're telling me the club couldn't have found someone, which obviously we know they could. Obviously they didn't. So to me, it's a little bit, you know, blaming the long-term plan and blaming what's gone on before in saying, oh, no one wants another Will Grigg. No one asked for another Will Grigg. We just asked for another striker to help the squad. You know, we saw how much Alex Pritchard, you know, said in his interview. He said, oh, even my game struggles because I haven't got that focal point to hit it into. You know, and those are the things that we do need. Obviously, you know, going back to it, I think it's short-sighted by the club. Yes, we've got long-term plans, but we need immediate plans. But for me, it just says a little bit as we're not really ready. Because I think if we got a half-decent striker in, the football we play, barring going to stupid places like Millwall, I think we'd do really well. But it seems a little bit like they're saying, no, not just yet. Let's leave it. Let's just solidify our place in this league. And then next season, we'll have a go. These kids will be another, you know, sort of year down the line and we'll go from there. So, yes, it's a massive frustration and big pressure on Gelhardt and, you know, even the rest of them to step up and add goals, you know. Sorry for the long-winded answer.
Yeah. Well, if you did finish 1-1, it is a point and it does obviously keep us, again, like we said, kind of for the past, 15 games now, very much mid-table, Kyle. But just before we have a look ahead to the next game, best of three players for you from the game, starting with your third, and then on to your second and your first.
Starting with my third, I got to give it to Dennis Sirkin. I know he was very short, but he was the one who got in there and got the goal. And I, like I said, Chislov for his character came back from a long injury, and he's willing to get stuck in, you know, and so absolute credit to him. And, you know, it'll just be nice to have him back as well. Second star has got to be, for me, Patrick Roberts. Another really fantastic game, especially in one where Ahmad just could not get it going, and say, you know, Jack Clark and things like that. And I know a lot's been said about, you know, Jack Clark, but, you know, Ahmad not getting going really, I think, hurt us. But to show that when one of our star players is off, someone like Patrick Roberts can literally pick up the ball and dribble it about 60 yards and probably should have laid it off to Gelhardt there, but, you know, it just didn't work out. I mean, I thought he was fantastic yesterday. So he'll be my second. And number one for me is Dan Ballard. I just think he's just been so good since coming back from injury, and he just shows, I mean, we talk about the business that's been conducted from Speakman and the likes. I mean, just what a solid job getting him in, you know, and I think a lot of people have said it, just enjoy him while he's here. he seems like someone who could be sold on for, yeah, apparently everyone's looking at our players now with like the likes of Patterson and things like that. But yeah,
so I think the best comparison for Ballard as well is I think Stoke have just sold the centre half to Leicester for 15 million.
Right.
I think if you're looking at Ballard, obviously, you know, Suter's played. I might have to check this one actually because I could be wrong on this, but I'm assuming Suter's probably played more championship football than Ballard has. I'm just going to look at this.
Ballard reminds me a lot. Younger. Ballard reminds me a lot of Ben White, and you look what he went for, 50 million. And then he played a handful of games in the championship with, I think it was Brighton and Leeds. And then, you know, next thing you know, he's playing the top of the league, Arsenal, 50 million.
Looking at Suter there, he's 24, so he's older than what Dan Ballard is. He obviously started at Dundee, he was at Stoke for 7 years. He's had loans at Fleetwood, Ross County, and he made 60 appearances at Stoke, and then obviously signed for Leicester. In the window just gone for 15 million. And again, like I say, taking into account Ballard's younger, because he's come through, I think it was Arsenal's academy he came through. He played, I think he was playing the season for Millwall last season. It was definitely up there. And obviously we've signed him, I think it was about 2.5 million we paid for him, possibly less. I'm not entirely sure on that one, but you're probably looking at, you know, if we were to sell him in the summer, you'd easily 20 million. But anyway.
Enough for a striker. We could maybe pay for a striker. I don't know. Good. So, but yeah, that's my three.
Top three for you, John?
Yeah, but I probably have to go for the centre-back pairing of Barth and Ballard. I thought they were fantastic yesterday. I think even Millwall would probably love both of them at the back. They were, you know, just fantastic warriors, and we know what they're like, and they probably relish those types of games. And yeah, I was very impressed with them. To pick another one, I'd... I don't think many other players played too well during the whole game. I'll probably give it to Trey Hume. Barry did give away one or two stray passes, but you know, for a slight little Irish kid, you know, he did very, very well and has obviously made
Northern
that position.
Irish, of course.
Northern Irish, sorry, yes. We'll get that in before we get sued. But yeah, I think he's coming on a lot. He's very, very good in the tackle. He's good going forward as well, get some great balls in. But yeah, I was very impressed. And if your defence is solid enough, you know, it gives you the platform for your forward players to go and play, even though for me they were massively off it yesterday.
They were. Last but not least, next game, Kyle, is Fulham, the replay. Obviously we played well in the first game against them and probably unlucky to actually be taken to a replay given the chances that we had, and obviously the offside goal that was chalked off with VAR, which of course won't be in action in the second leg. So ultimately it's nailed on that some decisions going to go against us that would get overruled with VAR, because that's exactly how it's going to work. But you know, people talk about the striker situation. Obviously we don't have a striker for this game, and quite frankly could have signed 10 in January window and still none of them would have been eligible. So that's an irrelevant argument for this game, but it's another big test and Fulham will want to advance, and I think you'll probably see an even stronger team than they put out in the first leg. I think Mitrovic could start, Willian, players like that. It'd be a tough game, but if you had to go with a prediction for it.
Oof. Gosh. I'm just most curious of how we're going to line up, to be honest, because it is somewhat of a free hit. I think we'll end up likely probably losing 2-0, which really wouldn't be the end of the world. I think Fulham's playing in great form just in general right now. I think we played fantastic, and you're right. We should have really just avoided the replay altogether by scoring another goal in the last game. But nonetheless, yeah, I think it'll be a loss, but nothing to get upset over. Yeah, just like you said, the striker argument is relatively moot at this point because no one would have been eligible to be registered to play anyways. So yeah, 2-0, probably a most likely defeat, but I think we'll play well at least.
Pessimist. John?
Yeah, I think we might nick it 1-0. I think it'd be a really, really good game. Probably a fairly tight game. Like Kyle said, I think they'll probably bring up a few what we'd call, you know, sort of first teamers, and they've had, you know, the weekend off because they played Friday night. And played relatively well against Chelsea. So yeah, well, obviously I'll take any win, you know, nice boost in the coffers as well and a nice home tie with Leeds. But yeah, I'll take any win. I think we might just nick it being at home, but you know, I'm never right, so I wouldn't read anything into that.
But as always, we'll try and get a podcast out talking about what happens in that game. And of course, the next league game is one that someone's going to have to remind me of because I can't actually remember who it is.
It's either Bristol City, QPR. I looked it up last night.
I think it might be QPR because I think someone said we had three London games in a row.
And Reading. I think it might be Reading as well. I got it right here. It is, yeah, Reading, QPR, and Bristol City. So on all pretty much mid-table teams for the next three, which I think are going to be very crucial.
Yeah, of course, that QPR game on Tuesday, and it's on the Sky Sports Red button, which never seems to work. Interestingly enough, but anyway,
let's say it's Valentine's Day, which is why I can't go.
That on Tuesday.
Good for you.
Interesting one. But let's say we'll be back to talk about that Fulham game and what happened in that. But until then, we will see you later. That's all, folks.